Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're a storytelling society. You know, I tell my story when I get the opportunity to go out and talk. I've been doing this for a minute, and I still have not outgrown. You still won't hear me say, I'm not going to share a long drunk log, because you can't appreciate where I am now if you don't know where I come from. And we get a lot of information at our meetings. And Kyle, I noticed that you just came and you joined us, and I want to welcome you. And if you go to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll get a lot of information. But that's not the power and that's not the strength of Alcoholics Anonymous. We get information, but we stay for the transformation, you know, and the transformational stories that take place, you can't appreciate if you don't know where we come from. And that's why we tell them. You know, they're not primers on how to drink. You know, they're not, you know, war stories, the shock in a man. You know, and the other thing about storytelling, sometimes you'll be confused if you go to enough meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some folk get confused with circumstance and situation and think that's the definition of alcoholism. I hear a lot of people share when they get to a podium that I never felt like I fit in. You know, I felt like I was adopted. I felt like, and a lot of that is just human condition. No, and because if you listen to my story, the outlines of it, I got a brother, Ron. It's four of us in the program, Alcoholics Anonymous. And when you hear Ronnie's story, Ronnie's a year younger than me, came out of the same house, slept in the same bed, my foot to his feet to his head, vice versa, a year younger than me. And when you hear Ronnie tell his story, he always wanted to be somewhere else. Wanted to be somebody else, wanted to be doing something else. And I, on the other hand, could not imagine being anybody other than me. I couldn't imagine being anybody other than a young brother growing up in Watts in the 60s. It was a changing time, it was a turbulent time, and I was gonna make something out of myself. I was gonna make my mom proud of me, and I was gonna be an asset to my community. I grew up like that. So I'm a guy that grew up with dreams, goals, hopes, and ambitions. You know, I'm not the one that was running around drinking behind my, you know, the parents. I never saw active alcoholism in my house. My dad was an alcoholic, but he drank away from home. He got put out when I was about 9, and I never saw it in the house. So although I know I suffered the effects of alcoholism, I never saw active alcoholism. And so I'm the kid. That's the kind of story I have, you know. So I was always class president, a student body president. I was a straight A student. I was teacher's pet. I had all that. As a consequence and as a result, I'm a late bloomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. It took me a while to get comfortable telling my story in AA because this is the first place I ever landed where folk try to out-bottom each other, right? And I wanted a penitentiary story, but I didn't want to go to the penitentiary and get it. And I'm not going to get another one now, so it is what it is. My story is my story. I'm 16 years old. I have not touched anything. I get a girlfriend at 16, which does not mean the same thing it means for a lot of you guys. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 simply means this. I ran with a group of dudes that went with the same group of girls. One of my boys broke up with this girl. I waited a little time to pass. I told my other boy I want to go with her. He went and asked her, came back and told me. She said, yeah, now I got a girlfriend. I had had other girlfriends before. This one actually knew she was my girlfriend, right? But I don't know what to do with girls. I'm out on a double date on this particular night. Me and my girl in the back seat, older partner of mine, him and his girl in the front seat, he's driving. Plastic cup of rum and coke comes to the back seat this particular night, drank it down real warm, rushed back to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hand started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things it had never said. I had arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to be and to say things I wouldn't do, be and say without it. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. Now, the interesting thing about my first drink, I hear a lot of people share about their first drink. And for many of you, you say from the gate, I was alcoholic coming out of the chute, you know, and for most of you, you say it was magical, mystical, transcendent. I'm drinking for the rest of my life. It didn't happen like that for me. In fact, I like to describe my alcoholism kind of organic. It kind of grew on me. I'm 16 years old. I took that drink. I didn't keep drinking that much. That first night I drank, I didn't get drunk. I didn't get pissy drunk. I didn't throw up all over myself. I didn't make a fool out of myself. I got a warm, tipsy feeling. I kissed and licked and sucked on my girl in some places I had never done before. And that's how my drinking stayed. I drink to go out on the weekends and party. I graduated from high school in 1971. that's when my drinking really took off. I went off to this major university not far from here. I was living in the dorms. If you went to the school I went to, you, in addition to whatever your major was, you picked up another three majors. One was drinking, one was smoking weed, and one was playing Bill Wiz cards in the dorms all night long. I excelled at those last three, you know, so somehow I stumbled and staggered through school. You couldn't have told me, you know, on the front end, you know, what it was going to be. When I started drinking that Tyrolia, Annie Green Springs, Boone's Farm, you know, Spinata, that Red Mountain, that Brass Monkey, you couldn't have told me alcohol was going to have its way with me. But it did what it is that it does. And I stumbled up out of that school, started working as a counselor for LA City Schools. I had a crew of guys that I ran with. I like the description. When Bill talks about the different classifications of alcoholics in chapter 3, I like the fact that he talks about that because it enabled me to look at my drinking in a different way when it came time. When I started really descending into alcoholism, which I can only see looking back, in the mid 70s, when I started having problems, I thought this was a phase I was going through because the guys in college that I ran with, I had a crew of six guys. They drank just as hard as me. They got loaded just as hard as me. We drank and used together. And some of them, they were the ones that introduced me to it. They were older guys and they looked just like me. The book describes that, talks about the social drinker. I don't know anything about them, but it talks about the heavy drinker. Given sufficient reason, they could stop or moderate. I thought I was like my friends. When we graduated from school, they started families, they started jobs, they started careers, put this stuff behind them. I thought this was a phase I was going through and I'd be just like them too. And that phase started stretching from the mid 70s to the early 80s. And in the late 70s, I started suffering some losses, and I'm not accustomed to losing. I lost my first job in 1979. I attributed it to Thursday paydays. You know, why would you pay somebody on Thursday and expect to see them on Friday? Don't even make sense to me, you know. And I was in about my third inventory before that boss came off of it for firing me, you know. So, you know, I started losing in 1980. I got married on a Saturday afternoon in April. I had a bachelor party the night before my wedding. None of the guys at the bachelor party are staying. You know, all of them go home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. None of them get married the next day. I'm still in my bachelor party till 7:30 in the morning. I show up at my wedding. I'm supposed to say my own vows. Apparently, when I show up, I'm staggering and it's so severe. My then wife-to-be looks at me and she looks at the preacher. She says, scratch the own vows, say the regular on him. My lines are cut to two words. I get into the ceremony. I get ready to say I do. I said, and threw up all over, passed out. I'm not taking a wedding picture to this day. You know, and Bill in this story, he talks about ominous warning. That should have been an ominous warning to my wife because that wedding day was the high point of that marriage. It went downhill after that. You know, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband, you know, remembers coming home, sticking my key in the door, wife and 2-year-old daughter sitting on the couch. I look over to the side and the guy is sitting in my chair with a gun pointed at my stomach talking about I want my money right now. And I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband, remembers sitting on my back porch, 2-year-old daughter coming outside, pulling at my coat, daddy, daddy, that's my piggy bank. I remember stopping, giving her a little grin. Don't worry, baby. Daddy's going to put some dollar bills in here for this change. I don't know how many times, you know, my wife covered for me with the landlord. You know, we were going to buy our first house and we had $10,000 in the bank. You know, we had got a lump sum of money and I think we had both got tax returns or something. And we had a separate account for this money and we both had our own accounts. And we were running low and one night my wife made the fatal blunder. She made the mistake of trusting her husband with the bank card. This is when ATMs were fairly new. This was in about 82 or 3. And she sent me to the store to buy some bread, milk, something, and gave me the PIN number. And when you hit the ATM machine and it's $10,000, and you look up and it's $9,600, no big deal. And you look up and it's $8,200, no big deal. And a couple of weeks go by and you look up and it's $6,400. And inside of that month, you look up one day and it's $80. And I remember we were down the one car at this time, always down the one car. You know, I'm on thin ice already, you know, and I worked about an hour away from where we lived. And my wife would drop me off and then she'd go to work. We were getting ready to go to work this particular morning. And she said, have you been going in the bank? No, no. She said, well, I got a call from the bank manager. He wants me to come down to the bank today. They have pictures of the person who's been accessing the ATM. I didn't know the ATM had a camera at the time. And I knew if I let her get ambushed by that bank manager, that she would call the police and send them to my job. And I remember sitting on the bed that morning and I said, I took the money. She said, what? I took the money. Guys, I don't know to this day, I don't have a memory or why it is I'm able to sit in front of you right now and tell you this story. Trust me, it must have been the longest trip ever into that job, you know. So I had lots of scenes like that. And finally, you know, I had descended to going in my wife's purse on a regular basis. And I did that one too many times and came home one morning. And a note was on the screen. The rest of your stuff is at your mama's house. And I'm put out of my house and I'm now my dad. And my five brothers got put out of their respective homes. And we all ended up at my mom's house. And we damn near killed her. That was in 85. And when I got put out of my house and went to stay at my mom's house, my ex-wife thought it was something salvageable about this piece of man she married. She would bring my daughter over on Saturday so we could keep a father-daughter relationship. And I wanted to be a father to my little girl with everything in me. I really, really, really did. I wanted to take her to Disneyland and I wanted to take her to Magic Mountain. I wanted to take her to a movie on a Saturday afternoon. I wanted to walk up the street, her little hand and my big hand, take her to the store and buy her some ice cream. I wanted to sit her in my lap and read stories to her. I wanted to tuck my little girl in bed at night and read her a bedtime story. I wanted to get the look for my little girl that I've seen men in the fellowship get. The look like, this is my daddy and this is my hero. And the best I could do on those Saturdays was 30 minutes. Tell my mom something like I'm going to the store to buy her some ice cream. I disappear. Sneak back on Sunday night when her mom was coming to get her. Still remember some of those long Sunday nights sticking my head around the side of my mom's house, tears flowing. And I see those heads in the car and those headlights backing out. And through the tears, I think to myself, there goes my life, backing out this driveway. And I've heard a lot of people share they were scared of dying out there. That's not a part of my story. I was never scared of dying. Scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Monday, the same as Tuesday, the same as Sunday, the same as Christmas, over and over and over again. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October 11th, 1986, I got directed to my fourth program of recovery. I went to the Harbor Light Center on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And little did I know what was waiting on me. On October the 10th of 1986, I was about two blocks from where I am right now, scene of the crime. And through a series of misadventures that night, I ended up dodging a black truck the morning of October the 11th. And on October the 10th, life and this disease of alcoholism that I suffer from was coming at me like a tsunami. It was washing my life away, wave by wave by wave, and I couldn't stop it. I couldn't stop it, you know. And something happened the morning of October the 11th. Prior to a meeting, prior to a sponsor, prior to a fourth step, prior to a fifth step, prior to any H&I panels, prior to any of that, something happened the morning of October the 11th. It was as if the wave stopped right here. What would we call that? Most of our members call that grace, that wave-stopping moment that happens for all of us. Bill Wilson, in his story, he talks about how dark it is before the dawn. Everybody has a dark it is before the dawn moment. Most of us call that grace. We don't create the grace. We don't control the grace. We can't predict the grace. We access the grace. And from that day to this, that's what's been happening in my life. I was 33 years old, and I was tired of losing. That October in 1986, I was in a real bad way, and I was in a real dark place. I was full of remorse, and I was full of regret. I was full of I'll never be able to forgive myself for the things I had done and what I had become. They brought a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous into the facility first weekend I was there. And a speaker stood in front of the group, somewhat like I am right now. And he was sharing about taking from the family, and he was sharing about taking from the job. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that. I'm different. Y'all ain't gonna hear my business. Speaker seemed like he must have knew I was in the room. And I want to take a moment, and I'm going to take a break right now. And no disrespect to most of you sitting in these squares that might have been around Alcoholics Anonymous for a minute. But before we disabled the chat, there was a gentleman that checked in, a gentleman named Kyle. And Kyle said he took a drink last night. It's brand new. And he's sitting in here with us right now. And Kyle, on behalf of you and anybody else that's new to sitting in here right now that might be in your first year of recovery, I want to talk to you. Ralph, what you going to say to me? How you know me? Well, all of us in here, and we know some things about you if you're in your first year. We know this has not been a good year for you. I got some bad news for you, Kyle. It ain't going to get better, and it ain't all right. If I keep doing what I've been doing, I'm going to keep getting what I've been getting. But I got some good news for you. There is a solution and there is a way out. And I got some other seemingly bad news. We're it. And I say that tongue in cheek because when I first got to you guys, I did not know. I did not know what I had fallen into the lap of. I didn't know. And I don't know about you, Kyle, but when I came here, I was 33 years old. And it had been a long time since I was welcome in anybody's house. I'm not the speaker that's going to try to scare you into recovery. I'm not the one that's going to tell you if you keep getting loaded, if you go back out there, it's still, I'm not that one. You can't scare me into recovery. People, in fact, and what I used to think of as my heyday, people used to see the way I was getting down and be like, damn, Ralph, ain't you scared of overdose? I'd be like, scared of overdose? I'm scared of the deadly underdose. You better put some more on here. So the message of fear is not the message of the whole alcoholic of my variety. Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about a message that'll speak to a guy like me. That's got to have depth and that's got to have weight. And to the message that today's speaker brings to you that's got the most depth and the most weight, you're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had given up on life. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old did not know where his little girl was enrolled in school and didn't know where his family was living. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had not answered anybody's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake-up call to go to work in so long I no longer thought I was employable. You're looking at a guy who came from a major university in this country, and my job at the end was taking the trash out for a 21-year-old. I was sleeping in the back of my mother's garage, and I was eating lemons off a neighbor's lemon tree for breakfast. And the men and women in this fellowship met me in that condition, and they welcomed me like I want to welcome you right now, Kyle. And I was in a real bad way, and I was in a real bad place. It had been a long time since I was welcome in anybody's house, and I no longer thought I ever had a capability of being a father anymore. I didn't think I'd be welcome in my little girl's life, and I didn't think I'd be welcome in my mama's house. I was in the Harbor Light Center, and it was October 1986. Tell a story. Christmas came, and I was coming up on 90 days. And they were keeping money on the books for me at the Harbor Light. I was getting disability. It paid for my stay, and it was some extra money that I'd have when I left. And I went upstairs, and I asked, could I have $60 of my money to go get a Christmas present? And the Harbor Light Center, where my treatment program was located on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. I've never been to Skid Row, but that's where I got sober. And I walked through Skid Row. I walked through the drunks. I walked through the addicts. I walked downtown. And I went to this little swap meet. And I bought my daughter, who was 2 years old at the time, 2 and a half, a little pink jacket with a gray fur collar for $40. $40 jacket. You know what it must have been. And I'm an extravagant guy. That big Christmas is subsequent. I'm an over-the-top guy. But this was just a little $40 jacket. And that $40 jacket, that Christmas, it looked like a mink star. Kyle, I had the feeling Daddy was coming back. Started taking the bus to Means of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a home group. I got four things that I want you to put in your kit of spiritual tools. I want you to get a sobriety date. If you don't have one, you ain't got one. Get a sobriety date. Protect it, respect it, grow it. Next thing I want you to do, Kyle, and anybody else that's new, I want you to get a home group. This looks like a wonderful group right here. Get a home group. Home group is something like a Cheers bar, somewhere you go where everybody know your name. They don't want you to get a sponsor. I know you, I see you. Probably sitting there thinking to yourself, I'm a grown ass man. Can't nobody tell me what to do. We know. That's why you up in here with us. Get a home, get a sponsor. Then I want you to get something else. Get a road dog. See, your sponsor is probably somebody that's going to show you the way. And you may not run with your sponsor. You may not roll with your sponsor. He may even be an older guy like I have for my first sponsor. You know, and plus you try to come correct to your sponsor. You go to me. No, sir, I'm not looking at girls in the meeting. But when you get a road dog with your dog, you'd be like, man, did you see those honeys at that meeting? We're going back to that meeting. And that's who you talk about your sponsor with. Get a road dog. I had my brother Ron. I had my boy Strange. And if this thing wasn't fun, you'd have another speaker here. You know, 34 years later, Ron Strange just celebrated 34. Ronnie's celebrating 34 next week. And I'll be on, you know, with, later on this year, 34 years later, still rolling. Get a road dog. If this thing wasn't fun, you'd have a different speaker here. You know, I was on a panel with a guy, 55 years sober at the time, Tom I. And a question came in the ask it basket. What's the most important thing you found in your 55 years of recovery time? And he didn't say anything long and flowery. He said one word, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. You know, old timers sitting on here right now, if it's supposed to be a program of attraction, damn it, make it attractive. You know, I'm dead serious about recovery, but I'm seldom serious in recovery. If you ain't laughing in this program, you ain't taking this program serious enough. And I don't know about the rest of the people that are sitting on here. And Kyle, I'm going to go out on a limb and probably suggest, I don't know if this is your first time coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what is going to happen for you if you get on this road with us. I don't know if you're going to get the hell of a wife, and I don't know if you're going to get the family back. I don't know if you're going to have the career that you've always dreamed of. I don't know if you'll get the big car and the big house. I don't know what's waiting on you if you try this thing with us. But me and you do both know what's waiting on you if you don't. I invite you to take a walk with us. I invite you to take a walk with us, and you might find what I found when I came in here October 11, 1986. And I came up in here with the one thing that I had to bring to the table that nobody else could give to me. And that one thing that I got to bring to the table is desire. Is desire. Ralph, how do I get desire? How do I get willingness? I've been around this camp before. How do I get it? Unfortunately, I don't know any other way to put it. And no, you know, I don't mean to offend anybody, but it's the best way I know how to put it. Well whooped ass. Well whooped ass. And it's got to be custom made for you. You know, we don't get to newcomers. The message, doing, you know, when you get to surrender, surrender don't come through the ears. It comes through the ass. You go, oh. smack that ears open. It's a couple of, you know, some anatomical facts about a guy named Ralph. I learned that when my behind is raw, my ears open and my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running, my ears start closing. Thank God I was tenderized well enough that last time I heard the music when I got back in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started going the means of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has not been hard for me to be a member in good standing for the past 33 plus years. You my people. You are my people. My mom gets this spiritual connection that she has. She's had it through church and she's had it all her life. She likes to hear thee and thou. That's not my language. I like to hear shit and God in the same sense. You guys speak to me. You my people. And I fell in love with the fellowship before I fell in love with the program. But I started going the means of Alcoholics Anonymous and I started going the means of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it dawned on me as a result of going to enough meetings, why be in a 12-step program and not take the 12 steps? That's like me seeing you sitting in the bar drinking and think I'm going to end up with a buzz. That ain't going to happen. I'm not going to sit up in a meeting seeing you taking steps and think I'm going to end up recovering. I better do it for myself. And I'm an all-in guy. I'm going to invite you to get all in this thing. Anybody that's new to this fellowship, we got a broad third tradition. And the moment I express a desire to stop drinking, I'm on the team. Anybody that's here that says, I have a desire to stop drinking, our third tradition, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. You on the team. Can't nobody put you off. It's a wonderful thing and it's a broad umbrella. But I want to share something with you. Everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the game. Put me in the goddamn game. What do you mean, Ralph? Put me in the game. What does that look like? You know, being all in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been an all in guy in the middle of the herd, in the middle of the game. I'm not a bench warming guy. I'm not a spectator guy. I'm not a sideline guy. I'm not knocking it. We need fans. We need spectators. We need haters. But put me in. Put me in the game. Why get in, Ralph? And what does that look like? At about a year and a half, so about a year sober, me and my brother and my friend Strange that I just alluded to, we got interested in the first leg of our triangle, and that's recovery. I fell in love with the fellowship, the unity, before I fell in love with the program, the recovery. But as a result of going to enough meetings, I got interested in the 12-step process. And we started a big book workshop in my mom's house in November of 1987. And somewhere in 1988, that group got on our knees as a group, and we said, God, I offer myself to you, and I turned myself in. I got in the game. God, I offer myself to you. My life is a wreck. I'm tired of you. I'm tired of running into the same walls. I offer myself to you. Do something with me. And he did something with me. He did something with me. Did something with me, Kyle. You know, that 33-year-old scared little boy playing of being a man, I got on my knees and I turned myself in. And I turned myself into the rest of this process. You know, these ego-reducing series of exercises that put me in touch with a power. If you're doing the 12 steps and if you're reading the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, for anything other than connection with the power, I'm reading it as a management tool and I'm using it to get human power. I read this and make no mistake about it, I'm a 12-step guy and I'm a big book guy. But more than that, I'm sober by the grace of God. That's it. That's all. I'm sober by God's grace. And you guys give me a program of action that allows me to access the grace. We don't create the grace and we don't produce the grace. What we do is we smash the window. The grace is available to anybody right now. The grace is available to the drunk laying in the street right now. Well, Ralph, how come he ain't got it? The receiver is blocked. The sender is sending. God don't do but one thing. Now, I had an old timer tell me, Ralph, God gave you something he didn't even reserve for himself. I said, what's that? He gave you the choice over whether or not you're going to return his love. God don't have no choice. God is love. The choice over whether or not to return his love. Grace is flowing. Receiver is blocked. That's what we spend the rest of our time doing. You want to know how to get the connection with the power? I'm going to give you the short version. Grow God, shrink Ralph. Whole deal. Whole deal. In that third step, I said, relieve me of the bondage of self. It's too much me between me and the power. It's too much me between me and you. It's too much me, you know, too much. That, yeah, I had a sponsor at breakfast one morning. I said, sponsor, I want to go through the 12 steps because I just think there's so much more to me. No, baby, we need so much less of you. When you reduce Ralph, what'll be left is the power. You know, that's the whole deal. And that's what we do. That's why we jump out. I got off my third step and I started doing a 4 and a 5. And remarkable things happened after I turned myself in, Kyle. Remarkable things have happened in my life. You know, that same guy who was going in the big man. Now, I'm just going to share a couple of them because I do like to leave some time because I want to hear from some of you guys. As a result of being an all-in guy, as a result of being all-in and Alcoholics Anonymous, that two-year-old daughter whose piggy bank I was going in, she's 37 years old. She's a practicing attorney in the state of California. She walked down the aisle 8 years ago, and she was accompanied, not by a play daddy or stepdaddy, by her dad. You know, she walked down the aisle that the man you guys returned, you know. And we were walking down the aisle. She was shaking on my arm, and the music was playing. She was saying, "Dad, this is the happiest day of my life. I'm sad about one thing." I said, "What's that, baby?" She said, "This is the last day I'll ever be Rain White, but I'll always be Daddy's girl." Put me in the game. Put me in. I'm an all-in guy. I have a 25-year-old daughter. Never seen her daddy loaded in one day at a time. She never will. Just got off the phone with a girl. I remember when she was moving out of the dorms when she was a sophomore at Boston University. She graduated from there about 4 years ago, and she was moving in the dorm, out of the dorms to her first crib. And I had to step in the bathroom. I flew to Boston. We were moving the kids in. Her roommates had their parents moving them in. You know, and Angela and Kyle, I want you to stick around. I want you to have your own moments. I want you to have your own moments. You know, I can look at the people sitting here. I'm looking at Jackie and Debbie and Mick and Reverend Beth, and I want you to have your own moment. I call them those grace come calling moments. They'll ambush you out the blue. We've come to expect them now. We didn't used to. You know, those are the moments where, you know, you stand at that graduation and you realize, this is me. I'm at the graduation. And they're actually proud to see me. You stand in the delivery room. It might be your spouse. It might be your mate. It might be standing in the delivery room with your grandkids, seeing them come into the earth. Sometimes it seems like things that don't look like blessings. You might be the one doing the funeral arrangements. You might be the last one that your mom or dad looked at. It'll hit you. It'll hit you. You might be sitting in the car giving your little baby girl driving lessons. Hit you. I want you to have your moments. I want you to have your moments. Those grace come calling moments. We were moving the kids in and I had to step in the bathroom. The tears were flowing and it hit me. This is what dads do. They don't go into piggy bank. They move their little girl into their first crib. Put me in the game. My granddaddy was my guy. I didn't have a dad. My granddad was a stand-up man. Man of integrity, and he commanded great respect. And I wanted to be a guy like that, but I didn't have the qualities and I didn't have the character. And I got grandsons right now. They say beyond your wildest drunken dreams, if you come here, you'll get something. I don't know about that for me in my experience. I had wild drunk dreams. But Alcoholics Anonymous, you gave me dreams. You gave me dreams I didn't even know I wanted. Because I'm granddaddy. Granddad. In our fear inventory, we talk about just to the extent that we play the role God assigns, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? The role God assigns. I didn't know I was getting an assignment October 11th, 1986. I didn't know that in 2020, we'd be having a worldwide crisis, the likes of which none of us have seen in our lifetime. And I didn't know I'd have an assignment. And in this uncertain time, through a series of what seemed like some bad things that went on, I lost a 20-year marriage, a 22 years of recovery. I lost all my money. I went broke. I lost my house in front of everybody. I went through a valley. I came out the other side. I have an experience that I pass on to people. And on the back end of that experience, I ended up in my mom's house when she was by herself at 85 years old. And for the last 5 years, it's been me and my mom. And in this time, this uncertain time, I pinch myself. My 90-year-old mom ain't by herself. It's me and her. To the extent we pay the role he assigns. I didn't know I was signing up for that duty, Kyle. You'll never hear Ralph Wisely. If you're sitting in here right now, you probably don't know what organization you join in, Angela. You probably don't know what this deal is really about, and I'm going to share something with you. A little piece of what it is that we really have going on that a lot of us take for granted. We're doing it right now. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, I get the opportunity to participate in some little boy or some little girl getting ready to have mama come on. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, I get to participate in some family getting ready to have daddy come back. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some man or some woman getting ready to have a hell of a mate in their life. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. Get to participate in some employer that I don't know and could care less about getting ready to have a hell of an employee in the workplace. Every time I go to a meeting, who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? Always wanted to do something significant. I've always wanted to do something important. I can think of nothing more important. I can think of nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that is Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll never hear Ralph White say, I don't know why I'm sober. I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, it's my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.